Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Hello, and welcome to an enhanced episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. On today's podcast, we have two interviews ready for your listening ears. Amanda Klutz from Spamalot. That's right, you heard me, Amanda Klutz from the great show Spamalot. We also have an interview with Iris Lieberman from Spitfire Grill. Don't miss either of these interviews. Also, Chicago critic Tom Williams brings us a couple of more audio reviews for your ears. And of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So buckle up, sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, giving you Chicago's theater news for the week of April 24th, 2006. The Theater Building Chicago sustained significant smoke and water damage after a fire occurred on Thursday morning, April 13th, following an apparent electrical power surge. While none of the three theaters on the ground floor were affected, the box office and the second floor administrative offices suffered extensive damages. But despite the fire, the Theater Building Chicago retained its never-ending season reputation with uninterrupted performances. The hero of the story is Tom Van Erman, the Theater Building Chicago's operations manager, who was first on the scene minutes after the blaze began, and stopping it short with what could have been a catastrophic inferno. The fire is believed to have originated from an office rented by the Illinois Theater Association. Restoration is now underway. Any assistance with the restoration would be greatly appreciated. And of course, tax-deductible donations are always accepted. In related news, if you go see the Tony Award-winning musical, Urinetown, you will be able to support the Theater Building Chicago's Fire Fund. That's right, for one night only on Thursday, May 4th at 7:30 p.m., you can see Urinetown and help the Theater Building Chicago pay off its $10,000 in emergency repairs. Tickets will be $35 and available at the Theater Building Chicago box office. Reserve your tickets now, because they are going fast. Well, it seems the Pulitzer Prize Committee has decided, in fact, to not give out the Drama Award this year. The decision came on April 17th from Columbia University that neither Adam Rapp's Red Light Winter, Roland Jones's The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow, nor Christopher Durang's Miss Witherspoon would be chosen to receive the Pulitzer Prize for drama. This will be the 15th time in the Pulitzer Prize Committee's history that they have decided to not award the drama category. And that is a true shame. The Looking Glass Theatre Company returns to the world of Charles Dickens with a world premiere adaptation of The Old Curiosity Shop, a grown-up fairy tale of dark despair, sentimentality, and desperation featuring some of the funniest and most bizarre of all of Dickens' characters. The Looking Glass's new adaptation is the fourth of five consecutive world premieres in the company's 2005-2006 Theater Without a Net season. Performances run through June 11th at Chicago's historic Water Tower Waterworks. Don't miss it. The 9th annual Chicago Improv Festival is underway. That's right. For this week, you can see some of the best improv and sketch comedy from around the nation. Chicago is very much widely known for its comedic roots, and this festival celebrates every aspect of that by bringing in groups and improv troupes from all around the nation. Also, don't miss an interview with Don Hall, the festival's producer. You can check out his interview at the Talk Theater in Chicago's interview page. Also, there is some great comedians in the lineup. Don't forget to go to CIF.com to get to the entire schedule of all the troupes that will be appearing on the stage. If you like comedy, then you must not miss this festival. Neil LaBute's Autobahn at the Profiles Theater has become so popular that it has been extended through May 28th. You have more of a chance to miss this great show. Do not miss it. Well, thank you very much for listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, music and lyrics by William Finn, book by Rachel Scheinkin, conceived by Rebecca Feldman, directed by James Lapine, produced by David Stone and Broadway in Chicago. It's like Survivor for nerds, which is a quote from William Finn, the music and lyricist for Spelling Bee. Chicago has another hot musical that will leave everyone glowing. Move over, Wicked. The nerds now reign supreme on Michigan and Chestnut Avenues in Chicago's Drury Lane Water Tower Place. They're holding a Spelling Bee 8 times per week. It is hilarious, charming, empathetic, and pure fun. The 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee is as near a perfect musical comedy as one could imagine. This smart, hip, thoroughly engaging musical is by far the funniest musical to hit the stages in decades. I laugh myself silly with Rachel Scheinkin's Tony Award-winning book and William Finn's tuneful songs. This is a wispy little musical that wins us from the start and keeps us laughing and cheering for our favorite nerd to win the bee. It is rare that I love a show so much that I wanted it to last for another hour or two. Spelling Bee is that kind of show. It is so full of heart, grace, and wit. It is a genuine crowd pleaser of the first order. I predict Spelling Bee will run for years. It is appealing. It is that funny. Americans are quite competitive, and spelling bees happen across the country on a weekly basis. Who can't remember getting a gold star or getting 100% on the weekly spelling test? Everyone remembers the word they missed in the school spelling bee, or the word that won it for them. So a musical about junior high students in a spelling bee is a natural, especially when it is populated by 3 quirky adults, 6 teenagers in the throes of puberty, and 4 random selected audience members. Add clever writing and excellent characterizations, and Spelling Bee certainly spells winner. Supervising the Putnam County Spelling Bee is Rona Lisa Pertuti, herself a past winner and present teacher. She is played by the rich voice Lucia Spina. Her word reader is the weird vice principal Doug Panch, played by Bill Larkin. The security person is the ex-con Mitch Mahoney, played by James Earl Jones II, who really belts with a tremendous amount of energy. The 6 nerds are a lovable collection of kids all battling adolescent demons while searching for the big spelling bee trophy. The teens are overachievers, struggling to please their parents and ultimately themselves. The science of word spelling is supreme for these kids. There is the red-headed, freckle-faced Leif Canterbury, who designs his own clothing, and it shows, who finishes third in his spelling bee but still gets to represent his school. Leif doubts his intelligence, yet he squints and spells words in a viciously funny, eye-blinking manner. Derek Tremblay is perfect as the cute, shy boy next-door type, chuck full of innocence. We learn to love him with his tender song, I'm Not That Smart. Tremblay's golden voice sparkles. There is also the girl with the lisp and the pigtails who only walks in straight lines and has two gay fathers. Her long-involved name, Schwarzen Grubermeier, is played by Christine Werney with an eye-popping cuteness. She is a junior high feminist, another terrific character. Next, there is the Catholic schoolgirl in her school plaid uniform, whose confidence and brilliance includes speaking six, not five, languages, baton twirling, and piano. Marcy Perk is played strongly by Jen Sese, who hides her fear of the world through her achievements in things like spelling. Next, there is Chip Berkowitz, the reigning champion, dressed in his Boy Scout uniform. Brad Weinstock, a recent Northwestern graduate, is hilarious as he loses due to his trouble with a sexual fantasy. His funny rendition of My Unfortunate Erection brings down the house. There is the bright beauty Olive, whose parents are always traveling to foreign lands, leaving her to drown her loneliness in a dictionary. Christian Page is terrific as Olive. Spelling Bee's most memorable dysfunctional nerd is the sickly fat boy, whose ritual for spelling comes from his deft use of his magic foot to spell out the words before he vocalizes them. Eric Rodinger is a hoot as William Barfy. The show moves along quickly. We get to love and empathize with each kid. Their quirky spelling rituals and the wild delivery styles each produced rich humor in a very physical way. I mean, the way these guys spell the words and the girls, it just gets you to laugh. These misfits are so human, so like us, that we cherish each one. The bizarre word selection, together with the wacky definitions and sentence usage examples by playwright Rochelle Shenkin, adds to the laugh. William Finn's smart lyrics give each character a definitive song that explains each personality. The rousing opening number and the manic pandemonium number gets the cast energized. The risky use of four audience members to be contestants in the show worked at the performance I reviewed. These plants really got into the spirit of the show. One girl even spelled a very tough word correct. Spelling Bee does everything superbly. This is a polished, flawless show. Long on laughs with gobs of heart. The audience enthusiastically responds to each scene. This is an entertaining, good time show that families will want to see over again. Once word of mouth takes hold, Spelling Bee will have a long and successful run here. And why not? This show is so much fun. I want to see it again. You'll want to also. Spelling Bee spells HIT, all in capitals. My rating for this show, not to be missed. It is 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, the exact title. It's at Drury Lane Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut in Chicago. The tickets range between $59.50 and $69.50. They are offering a day of performance drawing for $25 for seats in the first two rows for Tuesdays through Thursday performances. The regular schedule is Tuesdays at 7:30, Wednesdays at 2 and 7:30, Thursdays at 7:30, Fridays at 8, Saturdays at 2 and 8, Sundays at 2 p.m. The running time is 100 minutes with no intermission. It is on a limited open run. For more information about Spelling Bee, call 312-902-1400. That's 312-902-1400. This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast. Thank you for listening. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast. Here is my review of Love Song by John Kolvenbach at Steppenwolf's Main Theater, directed by Austin Pembleton. Love Song is a sweet, quirky, romantic comedy. The world premiere of John Kovenbach's Love Song is a major achievement. Kovenbach is a writer of the first order, blending hints of Edward Albee, David Mamet, with a sprinkle of John Gare to produce a fresh new voice in theater. This guy is a playwright. Love Song combines rich, raw, rancorous humor with a new take on those realistic, dysfunctional relationship plays that seem to find their way onto Steppenwolf's stages. Love Song is a sweet, gentle play that is a comedy chock full of fantasy, romance, a memorable character or two. Love Song takes place in an impressive, spacious, yuppie loft set designed by Scott Gerwitz and Julie Rossetti, where the married couple, Molly, played by Marianne Mayberry, and Harry, played by Francis Guinan, are debating Molly's firing of her last intern. These exchanges are witty, biting, and humorous. Is this another spirited relationship play? Not so fast. We also meet Bean, played by Ian Barford, in a marvelous performance full of vulnerability. Bean is a strange sort, a disheveled savant-type character who finds it hard to function in society. He lives in a tiny one-room studio with a beat-up chair and a small bag of clothes with a cup and a spoon, but no fork. His life is shrinking into oblivion as the bleak world outside overwhelms him. His sister, Molly, tries to aid him, but his dysfunctional manner only tries her husband Harry's patience. The exchanges between the three are extremely funny. When Francis Guinan's Harry and Marianne Mayberry's Molly and Ian Barford's Bean are deliciously manic, physical, and hilarious, the exchanges between the three prove Kovenbach's wit, humor, and interesting character development. When Bean meets his soulmate, Joan, played by an intense Molly Ringwald, who breaks into his studio, the sexual sparks fly, resulting into groping and animal sensual romps between the two. Bean has discovered the bliss of sex, of love, of pure romance. He now has the assurance and twinkle in his eye like a satisfied human being. Throughout this offbeat romance, we wonder if Bean has found a loving person or is he only fantasizing. When Molly and Harry decide to indulge in some daytime sex, they play hooky from work. This scene was precious as the two cleverly call in sick. The fantasy was marvelously played out with a smart mime work by the two seasoned actors as they imagine lighting cigarettes, of having sexual encounters, of drinking a nice liqueur. Love Song unfolds as a playful, cute romantic comedy full of fantasy that deftly deals with the rekindled sexuality. It deals also with loneliness and the desperation we experience. Bean's mysteries are played out in a way that has us wondering, is he crazy or is he really a profound observer of life? Director Austin Pendleton has his terrific cast moving, sometimes frantically, in an apt use of physicality to enrich the emotion and the humor of a scene. Love Song demonstrates that our lives need fantasies in order to deal with the stresses of our chaotic times. Love Song offers us a glimpse of the power of fantasy and imagination, where love can transform us from the mundane to the sublime. Love gets us to change, to be better humans. Experiencing love, no matter real or imagined, can reap rich rewards that will ignite our passions. The lessons of Love Song demands that we throw caution to the wind at times to embrace life, love, and sometimes even lust. That's simply being human, and Bean shows us the way. My rating for Love Song, highly recommended. It's at Steppenwolf Theater, 1650 North Halstead in Chicago. The tickets run between $20 and $60. The schedule for Love Song is as follows. Tuesdays through Sundays at 7:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, matinees at 3. Wednesday matinees at 2 p.m. starting May 10th. The running time is 2 hours and 20 minutes with intermission. A Love Song runs through June 4th. For more information, call 312-335-1650. That's 312-335-1650. This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest today is Amanda Klutz from the show Spamalot, which is just opening in Chicago on Friday, April 21st. And Amanda is in the dance ensemble, is an expert dancer who has many Broadway credits. Hello, Amanda.
Hello, Tom.
How you doing?
I'm doing really good.
All right, so tell us about Spamalot.
Well, Spamalot is a ridiculously funny show. It's based off of the Monty Python movie, and it opened on Broadway about a year ago. The tour began March 15th of this year, and Chicago is our second city on the national tour run. And the show is just, it's fantastic. It's just really silly. The audience loves it, especially if you're a Monty Python fan. It follows the movie very well, and it's just lots of fun. Be prepared for laughter and fun and excitement.
Well, that sounds great. I know, yeah. It played in Chicago a couple of years ago with the original cast before it went to New York.
Yeah.
And it got good reviews here. And so tell us who's in the cast besides yourself.
Yes. Well, we have Michael Segrè, who's playing the role of King Arthur, and Rick Holmes playing Lancelot. David Turner is playing Sir Robin. We have Pia Glenn as Our Lady of the Lake, and Christopher Gurr as Sir Bevedere. I don't know if I'm forgetting someone. And Tom Deckman as Prince Herbert.
All right, let's talk about you. You are in the dance ensemble.
Yes.
And so tell us what that involves.
Oh, it's so much fun, because being in the ensemble, you get to, you know, obviously be in a lot of the group numbers and play a lot of different roles. So I am a Finland dancer in the beginning, and then I, you know, go into this swampy costume, and I'm a member of the Laker Girls. And then I get to put on beautiful beaded, head-to-toe beaded, like, leotards that have just enormous headpieces and things for being a Camelot dancer. And, you know, just, I mean, I could go on. I have so many different parts that I play in the show. It's really fun because it keeps going, and everything is so different. So, you know, each scene is a new costume. I think I have like 10 to 12 costumes. I can't even remember. I've just costumes.
So it's really, besides the dance, it's just a workout, just getting in and out of the costumes, right?
Oh, it is. Yeah. It really is. In fact, when we came on Wednesday, and we've been in previews, and tonight is the opening night on Friday, April. So Wednesday, we had to meet with our dressers. We have a lovely group of dressers here in Chicago that help us get all our costumes on and off. And I had to have like a 10-minute conversation with them about the costume changes that I have and how we do them and how fast they are and what pieces go first and last. And, you know, it's really, you know, all planned out and well organized.
Yeah, I think a lot of audience members don't realize what goes on backstage to keep these musicals going, particularly with all these scene changes and costume changes. Well, I understand the advance here has been very good. It got good reviews, you know, when the first time around here, and people loved it, and you know, there's a built-in audience for all that craziness from Monty Python.
You are so right, Tom. It's funny because sometimes during the show, you know, audience members are screaming out the lines, so the actors on stage, you know, if they forget their line, it's good because the audience will fill it in. I mean, they are really diehard, and, you know, people coming all dressed up in different character costumes. And, I mean, there are some really big Monty Python followers that absolutely love the show.
Boy, and you're right. It's funny. You're right down the street from the Green Faces in Wicked, and it's the same kind of thing is happening there.
Yeah.
That's cool. Exactly. I'll have to bring my camera tomorrow when I see the show. I'm sure I'll see some people in full costume.
You probably will. I wouldn't be surprised. We had in Boston a full you know, black knight costume. We had a little kid dressed up as a knight. We had a Guinevere and a King Arthur sitting in the front row. I mean, it's just, and it's so fun when you see that, you know, because you know that the audience is just coming to enjoy themselves, and that's all that we ask, that they just enjoy themselves, because it's a fun show, and we're enjoying ourselves, so we want them to as well.
It must be a hoot seeing Michael Siberry doing crazy comedy, such a serious classical actor with all his training.
Yeah, it's true. But he's brilliant. He's really funny, and he's gotten amazing reviews as well. He's doing a wonderful job. All the principals are just doing a wonderful job at making the character themselves, but also keeping intact everything from the Monty Python characters that they have to, you know, reincarnate, I guess, because the audience expects the characters to be and act a certain way from the movie, and so it's hard for them, I think, to make it their own, but also make sure that the audience is happy with how they're doing the rendition.
Well, let me ask you about touring, since you've been on the road before, and I've often wanted to ask people who are on the tour, and I know a lot of our listeners are always interested in how life is. I mean, you're living in a hotel room, you're doing what, 8 shows a week?
Yeah.
You're working hard in your shows, and you're in a strange city. Tell us how that lifestyle works. How difficult is it?
It is kind of difficult. I will say, when I first toured with 42nd Street, it was harder because we were moving every week. It was a week-to-week tour. Sometimes we had 2 weeks or 3 weeks sit-downs, but most of the time, every Monday, we traveled to a new city, and we were staying in hotels. And that does get hard. It gets, you know, you get to feel a little bit claustrophobic. At the same time, you're seeing great cities and having a good time exploring new things. But it is hard because you don't, you know, you can't wake up and even have a bowl of cereal because you don't have a refrigerator in your room. So that's kind of hard. Now, this tour is a lot different because we're in cities for such a long period of time. We're in Boston for 8 weeks and we're in Chicago for 6. And it's the same thing is happening with other cities along our way. We have long stays. So we don't have to be in hotel rooms. A lot of the cast members have gotten their own living situations, you know, here in the city or in Wrigleyville or in Lincoln Park. And so we have apartment-style living. So you have a kitchen and you have, you know, just a living space and just this, so much better. It's an easier way to live.
Do you roommate with other members of the cast?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the people double up, you know, get a two-bedroom apartment and share. I would say that probably 75% of the cast does that. And then, you know, other people get one bedrooms or find or stay with friends or family. That's always great, too. You know, when you are in a city where you're home or you have family there, you can stay with them, and then you feel, you know, totally at home and at ease, and there's no problem at all, you know, whatsoever. But, you know, we do double up, and we share, and that's good, too, because you're in a new place, and it's fun to explore with somebody and have company. So that does happen, yeah. Luckily, we all get along, so that's good.
At the different theaters, are there different sizes and things? How hard is it to... when you go to a new, like you came from Boston and now you're here in Chicago, is there a major difference in the stage at the Palace versus where you played in Boston?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, and that was really hard for us the first couple of days that we've been here, because the theater in Boston was relatively small, very intimate, and you know, it was something that we got really used to there, and then we came to Chicago and it's a huge, beautiful house and very wide and a bigger stage. And it's hard, I think, for our show and something that our director, Mike Nichols, and our co-director have talked to us about, that we have to make sure that we don't try to play to the bigger house, to keep things small, to keep things intimate, because our show is about that. It's about just talking to one another, and we don't need to perform out into, you know, the third balcony, because they'll get it. It's better if the audience comes to us instead of us trying to come to the audience. So it was a little bit hard these last 2 days, and something that they have really, you know, been hard on us about, to not to try to do that, not to overperform, because the house is so much bigger here. And we'll be going to, you know, every city's going to be different. I think in Washington, D.C., which is our next city, the theater's very small again, and then Toronto, it gets really big again. So it's an adjustment. Definitely the first couple of days are an adjustment, and it's a pit. You know, you fall into a pit, into a black hole, and then you're trying to dig yourself out of it. And you know what? The audience is there to watch you anyway, so you don't have to try to reach out to them, because they're already there to come see us.
Yeah, so. Just because it isn't Broadway, we're pretty hip here. We our theater people, they get it.
Yeah, they get it. And yes, you're right. Chicago is an amazing theater town. I think it's so exciting that shows like The Kid are coming here and having a sit-down company, because I think that it's so important for actors to be able to have other city options than just New York City. And I think it's great that Wicked opened this company here. And it just shows that other cities are ready for that.
We also opened Spelling Bee, you know, that's going to be an open run, and it's just awesome. It's the word of mouth is already doing. And they're planning Color Purple is going to have starting next year, yes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
They've already had a couple $1 million in advance.
That's fantastic.
So
that makes sense, because Oprah Winfrey's the producer, huh?
Yeah. Well, that's a good
great,
show,
though.
Too.
That's fantastic. And, you know, it's happening in Vegas, too. Vegas is trying to do the same thing, where they have sit-down companies of shows, and Spamalot's actually opening up a company in Vegas at the Wynn Hotel, and I think it opens up in 2007, and they already have a 10-year contract, I think.
Well, part of it, you know, is when you tour. I mean, you guys are planting the seeds, because, you know, so many thousands of people from all over the country will have seen the show, and
right.
It creates a market for it in Vegas.
Totally, exactly. And we're pretty much, for the first year, we stay on the East Coast. So I think that by the time that it opens in Vegas, the people on the West Coast are really going to be anxious to see it, because they might have heard about, you know, the tour and Broadway, and so they'll be really ready to go, because we don't even go over to the West Coast until, I think, the fall of 2007. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about your background, because I know you have tremendous credits. So tell us what your background is, your education, and what shows you've been in lately.
Sure. Well, okay. I'm a Midwest girl. I grew up in Ohio. I came to New York City for school. I went to a musical theater conservatory called AMDA, which is the American Musical and Dramatic Academy. It's right on the Upper West Side in Manhattan. It was a great school. I danced and sang and acted all day. As I graduated, I went into the national tour of 42nd Street, which happened in about 2002, and I was on the road with that for a year and a half. In fact, we were in Chicago for 2 weeks. We played at the Oriental Theater.
Yes, you did. I was there. I covered that show and gave it a rave.
Good.
There's nothing. It's got one of the great opening numbers.
It does. Well, it really does.
Well, how many is it, like 50 or 60 dancers on stage? Something like that.
There are, yes. Well, the female ensemble in that show, I think there were 25 women. And I think with the men, it was, oh goodness, I can't even remember, but it's a very large cast. I think there were 75 of us in the whole cast, including the principals and all the ensemble. So it was a very large cast, and I had a great time with that.
So you toured that for, how long were you in 42nd Street?
A year and a half.
A year and a half, okay.
Yeah, I've been to every city in the United States.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, it really is.
And then you did Good Vibrations?
Well, first I did the Radio City Rockettes right after 42nd Street, which had been a dream of mine since I was 6 years old. I wanted to be a Rockette and dance at Radio City Music Hall. So I fulfilled that dream, and it's just amazing. It's an amazing privilege to be dancing on that stage. It's gorgeous.
Yes, it is. And well, we have, they do the Christmas show here.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Have you been in that?
I haven't been in the Chicago cast, but it is very similar to the show that New York City puts on.
Yeah, that's what everyone says. The quality control of the Rockettes is amazing.
Oh, yes, yes. They make sure that we are all, there's 200 Rockettes nationally. So whether you're at Radio City or in Chicago or in Boston, wherever they're performing. We are all the same, and the tradition of excellence and proficiency is exactly the same.
I understand it. The rehearsal process goes forever.
It's pretty brutal. Yeah, it's pretty brutal. We have it's only 2 weeks long for the show. It's, you know, which is insane.
Two weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks. And
wow.
And you rehearse every day from 10 to 6, and you don't stop. I mean, the day is exhausting, and at the end of it, your feet are just, you know, on fire, and the next morning you wake up and your body is just so sore. I mean, down to your pinky is sore, because they tell you where every single body part needs to be at this, that, and that time. So it's very, very demanding.
Well, it's a testimony, the fact that you have 42nd Street and the Rockettes on your resume, says that you are a professional dancer of the highest caliber. I mean, you know, if I'm casting for a show and I see, you know, your photo and I see your credits, I mean, you're automatically at the callback.
Oh, well, thank you. I wish you were casting every show.
Well, but isn't that true? I mean, it certainly gives you a leg up, I would think.
Yes, I think so. I mean, people know that when they hire Rockettes that they are getting someone who is a very hard worker and, you know, is a perfectionist. So I think it's a great thing to have on the resume.
Okay, after the Rockettes, then what was your next show?
Then I did Good Vibrations on Broadway, which was based on the Beach Boys. Well, it was used all the Beach Boys music. It was, I think we had 33 of the Beach Boys songs in our show, so it was an amazing catalog. It was, oh, just a blast. I had a lot of fun, and I met great people, and it was a short run on Broadway. I think it only ran about 3 months, but I had a great time, and I loved the show.
Okay, and then from there you...
And then from there went back to the Rockettes, okay. So this past Christmas, and did the Rockettes again, and then started Spamalot a month later.
Wow. So you,
yeah.
And you said the Spamalot tour is going to go through the United States through 07, into next year.
Yeah, in fact, when we were in Boston, we're already scheduled to come back. So it's, you know, they have really, you know, publicized it, and people all around the country, I think, just are anxious to have it in their city and to see it.
Well, let me ask you this now. When you get cast in these shows, do the cast members stay in the show until the run ends, or do you have options to get out, or how does that work?
Well, it's a little bit different for each person based on how you negotiate your contract, but most of the time when a show like this is cast, the principal actors, the leads of the show, they sign a one-year contract, so they're with the show for 1 year. And they have the opportunity to extend that if they want, but they most of the time are in the show for a year. The ensemble has a different contract, and we just have a 4-week out. So I can, you know, put in my notice at any time and have 4 weeks. You know, it works really nicely, and it's a great opportunity. Especially with a tour like this, where we're coming to these amazing cities and staying for a long time, I think people in the show will probably stay for a while just because it's such a great tour. We're really, really lucky.
Yeah. Tell us some of the preparations that the dancers make and ensemble members make. I mean, you have all these different numbers to do. I mean, I think, I've always thought that being in the ensemble many times is harder than having a lead.
Well, I mean, I think that they are both very challenging in their own right and way. But the ensemble, we work really hard. You know, we make sure we're all warmed up and stretched and ready to go. And, you know, some people are doing, you know, their abs at half hour. And then you've got other people doing stretches and warming up, singing. And, you know, I mean, it's very, we take our job very seriously. And we make sure that our, you know, bodies are ready and limber and warmed up and ready to go. So it you know, it is, it's challenging. We dance a lot in this show, a lot. So you have to be ready to go for the show.
And of course, if your foot hurts or your back hurts, you just keep rolling, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. But we're allowed, you know, time off if something, you know, hurting us too bad. Luckily, we have amazing swings, which are basically, we have two female swings and two male swings that will come in and say, I'm sick. I call out of the show and they know my part already and they come in and fill in for me.
So you do have, there are a few understudies, you might say, or to use the right term, swings that can't fill in.
Right. Well, yeah, swings and understudies are a little bit different because swings are exactly what I just said.
Okay.
They cover all the ensemble roles. So they know everyone in the ensemble. They know exactly what they do and where and when and how. And an understudy is usually somebody that's already in the ensemble that understudies a lead role. So that's the difference. The swing is not on every night. She or he sits in the dressing room or out in the house and watches the show, and an understudy is on in the show, you know, is understudying the role in case somebody in the lead role is out of the show.
Now, Spamalot, you're running, what, Tuesdays through Sundays, correct?
Yep, Tuesdays through Sundays.
And
a Wednesday and Saturday matinee.
Wednesday and Saturday matinees, and it'll be here at the Palace running through June 4th. And, of course, there's no way of extending it because you go to another city, right? But they might reschedule it if it does as well as we anticipate, because I've heard the advance has been real good.
Yes. I think that there might, you know, be a chance that we come back, but we traveled to Washington, D.C. June 5th.
Oh, so... Wow. Well, I really thank you for the insights, and I'm looking forward to the show tomorrow because I've always liked Monty Python stuff. It's such silly fun.
It is silly fun, and I think you'll find that right from the get-go, right from the overture of the show, it kind of just tells the audience to sit back, relax, and just laugh.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. There's enough serious stuff going on in the world.
That's right.
One of the great things about musicals is for that 2 or 3 hours that you're in the theater, you just forget everything and just have some fun.
That's so true. Very true.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you in the show. And
thank you.
I really appreciate you giving us the time. I know you've been busy, but we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Tom. Thanks. It was nice to talk to you.
It was nice talking to you, and this is Tom Williams, and we'll talk to you next time. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's podcast interview. Today's special guest is Iris Lieberman, who is one of the grand ladies of Chicago musical theater, a person who I have seen in so many shows that it is amazing. She is currently starring in Spitfire Grill from Provisional Theater, which will be opening this weekend at the Theater Building in Chicago. Hello, Iris.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Great. Tell us what it's like to be in a show in a small venue. I've seen you in so many of the major theaters in Chicago.
Yes, well, it's actually very exciting to be working for Provision Theater because they're such a new company. And starting out at the gate, they got wonderful reviews and lots of Jeff nominations. So they were born and were well known all at the same time. So it's kind of exciting to be working with a new company and be in on the beginning of something like this. And the second thing, one of the things I like about working in small venues is sometimes the best of all possible worlds because you're doing theater, it's live, and yet because it's such a small intimate space, you can do things very small. You don't have to worry about projecting in a 900-seat house. And so you can do a little bit more of what would be considered film acting. So it can be very honest and very true and very real. And working in a small venue can be the best of all worlds.
Well, how is it to work with Tim Gregory as a director? I mean, we all admire him as you know, quite a classical actor.
Yes, well, he's as good a director as he is an actor, I have to say. And that beautiful face you see is reflected with a beautiful person inside.
Yes.
And that's really true. I'm not just making that up. I mean, that really is true.
Tell us about Spitfire Grill, your role, and kind of a little bit about the story.
Well, you know, the mission is, it fits in perfectly with the mission statement for Provision Theater, because it is a hopeful play, and it is about reconciliation and redemption. It's the story of Hannah Ferguson, who owns a grill in Gilead, Michigan, Gilead, Wisconsin, And a young girl comes out of prison. She sees a picture of fall colors at the creek in Gilead, Wisconsin, and she wants to change her life after prison and come to this place which looks so beautiful and peaceful and idyllic that she's seen in a magazine and make a life for herself there. And she gets a job working at the Spitfire Grill, which I own, and she really changes the town and changes everybody's life for the better. There's been a lot of secrets held in the town by other people and by Hannah and by other people in the town, and all of those secrets are revealed, and everybody seems to have been redeemed in a very good way, in a very positive way, by her coming to the town.
But this is also a musical, right?
Yes, it is.
It's I would call it a chamber musical the time I saw it.
Yes, it is. I would call it a very much an ensemble piece. There are let's see, there are seven people in it, four women and three men, and we have a six-piece orchestra, and it's in a it's in the West Theater at the Theater Building, so it's in a very small space, and it definitely is an ensemble piece. It's not. You know, there isn't any feature performer like a Dolly or a Maid. It's definitely an ensemble. I would call it a chamber musical.
Okay, who are some of the other players in the show?
Yes, well, I'm glad you asked me that. Tempe Thomas, who's a Northwestern graduate, played Percy, the girl who comes to the town from prison. And Shelby, another lady in the town, is played by Susan Moniz, who you know very so so many times. And the lady who's the postmistress and the town busybody is played by Mirka Gerton. Very, very funny.
Yes.
And then the sheriff is played by Jared Zimmerman. And Caleb, my nephew, is played by Jeffrey Baumgartner. And then there's the mysterious visitor played by David Marcotte.
Well, it sounds like a terrific show. I saw the production that Appletree did a couple of years ago.
Yes, I did not see that. I was working at the time and didn't get to see it.
Yeah, I know. I always ask you when I see it shows, what have you seen? And then it's true. And I never realized, yeah, if you're working all the time, it's pretty hard to see shows.
It is hard to see shows. That's one of the good things about being out of work. When you are out of work, there aren't very many good things, but that's a good thing. You can go to see all your friends in play. And that's a positive way of looking at it.
Yeah, the Spitfire, the production at Appletree was pretty good. And we said, you know, this show should be mounted in the city. And I'm glad that Tim decided to do it.
I'm surprised no one has because it's such a good story. It's based on the movie called The Spitfire Grill.
Right.
With Ellen Burstyn and Marcia Gay Hart. But, of course, this is a musicalized version. And they've made some changes to the script. It doesn't follow the movie exactly. I saw the movie a long time ago. But I remember that there are differences from it. But the music is one of the highlights of it, of the production. It has such great music. It's Appalachian music.
More of a folksy kind of, a little bit of an Irish.
Yes, country with a folk flair.
Well, you have one of the big ballads in the show, if I remember.
Yes, yeah, I do. I've got actually two lovely ballads that I do, and it's a wonderful score, and we have a really good band. Valerie Mays is our musical director. She's terrific, and we have an excellent, excellent orchestra. You wouldn't think you could fit six musicians and seven actors on that little space, but you can. Another one of the challenges of working in a small space.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your career. In doing my research, folks, I got to tell you this. Almost every time I go to a musical, a major musical, you have a role in it. It's incredible. You are one of those ladies that's always working, and that's a testimony to your talent and your versatility. Because I've seen you do, you know, leading ladies. I've seen you do ingenues, comic roles. I mean, there's not anything you won't do on stage.
Well, I guess not. That's how you keep working. I started in ballet when I was about 3 years old. My mother, instead of taking me to nursery school, she had this idea she would take me to ballet school to meet other kids. And I really liked the dance, and I really liked performing. And when I was about 10 or 11, I was very small for my age, but I had a loud speaking voice. And I was 10 or 11, and I looked like I was about 7 or 8. So they were looking for someone to be have a part in a play, and I was littler than I looked. I looked littler than I was, and so I got the part. And I started acting then and doing children's plays at the Drury Lane at Evergreen Park back in those days. And I just have been working my whole life since I was 10 years old. I got my Equity card when I was about 12. I did a national tour of Bye Bye Birdie, and I got my Equity card, and I've been working ever since, and boy, am I tired.
Wow, that's amazing. And I know you worked at Candlelight Dinner Playhouse,
yes,
too.
Yes, I did. I did 24 productions there.
Wow, you must be one of the persons that's done one of the most there.
Well, I don't know. There are a lot of people who've done a lot of shows there, but I'm way up there at the top.
Well, tell us some of the key roles that you had there.
Well, I won a Jeff Award for playing Henrietta in Robert and Elizabeth. That was at the Forum Theater, which was the small theater next door to Candlelight.
Mm-hmm.
The first show I did at Candlelight, I think I was about 15 or 16 years old, and I did the Roar of the Grease Tape, The Smell of the Crowd. And my dad, because I only had a learner's permit, my dad would let me drive to work, and then he and my mom would go to a movie or something like that, and then pick me up afterwards, and I'd drive back with them because I couldn't drive alone at 15 or 16. I only had a learner's permit. So I have very good memories about my youth and growing up at Candlelight. I think I spent my 21st birthday there doing this performance. So I have very fond memories of Candlelight.
With starting so young, I would imagine there's a lot of plays that you started out maybe playing the little girl or the teen and then eventually the mother and so forth.
Yes, I have. I've done that on several occasions. One notable one was Fiddler on the Roof, which I did at Candlelight. I was in the first production of it that they did there. And then about 2 years ago, I wound up playing Golda at Drury Lane Opera with Craig Spidle. I played two of the daughters. I played Huddle at Candlelight and Seidel, and then I wound up playing Golda. And in Sound of Music, I played Liesel, and I played Maria twice, and I played the Mother Abbess, and I've also played Elsa. So that's one of those shows you can kind of grow old doing your whole life. You have something to look forward to playing another role in.
How do you deal with that? I mean, when I guess it's each time you revisit the show, it's got to be an interesting experience to do that.
Well, it is. And I tell you, doing Fiddler on the Roof was a very interesting experience for me, playing Golda in that, because I had played the daughter 3 or 4 times. And it's a completely different play when you're playing the mother, because it's all about keeping the family together, keeping your daughters safe, and about protecting them. And when you're playing one of the daughters, it's about life and exploring and getting out and finding your mate if you're playing Seidel, and getting to marry Muggle, or meeting this young man with ideals going to take you and see many, many different things in the world if you're playing Huddle. And when you're playing one of the daughters, it's sort of about busting out. And when you're playing the mom, it's really different experience. It's all about keeping your chicks under your wing and keeping them safe and making good matches. So it's a completely different perspective on the play. You have to completely revisit it and get rid of any ideas or preconceived notions you had about who the mother was when you were playing the daughter.
It shows the growth as a performer, too, that you mature into the other role. So, but that's got to be a really interesting experience. And a lot of people aren't aware of that, or they say, geez, I remember when you played so-and-so.
Well, it's a very different play. I know Fiddler is when you're playing the daughter as opposed to playing the mother. Very, very different.
I would imagine Sound of Music is very similar.
Yes.
I thought you were marvelous in the last production. I believe it was at Theater at the Center.
Theater at the Center in Munster, yes. I really liked playing Elsa. I enjoyed playing that role, and I had 2 great guys to work with, Larry Adams and Dennis Kelly. Larry Adams is the captain, and Dennis Kelly is Mac. And all of my scenes were with them, and I just couldn't have had a better time with them. They're just 2 fun, goofy guys. I just love working with them.
Well, you marvelously landed the 2 numbers that were not in the movie, but are in the play, and I think are great songs.
They are great songs, and No Way to Stop It, I think, is a very timely song for the world today. It's about people who sit by and say, there's nothing I can do about it, so, you know, why worry my pretty little head about it, as opposed to going out there and doing something to try to make change, to try to make things better, and to try to make the world a better place.
You've been an actor all your life.
All my life.
And you've done some film, too, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I've done a few things and film. You know, there are times when Chicago gets hot and there are things in town that are shooting, and I've been lucky enough to get a couple of those. Once or twice I've wound up on the cutting room floor, and that's not so much fun, but you still get the paycheck, so that helps your bruised ego a little bit.
Well, let me ask you this as sort of advice to some of the young actors, because I know these podcasts, a lot of the local actors in town do listen to them. Mm-hmm. What would be your advice to the young kids who are, you know, struggling to make it as an equity actor, trying to figure out whether or not they can, you know, actually make a living at it, or what would you say from your perspective?
Well, you know, it's a tough business, and you have to be aware of that going in. I was talking to somebody who's not in the business. He said, well, like now, somebody like, say, Britney Spears, that she'd be like in the top 1 percentile of her business. And I said, no, I'm in the top 2 percentile of my business because I have a job. So you figure, and there's 98% unemployment in our field. So when you have a job, you're in the top 2 percentile of the field. And if you're looking at a star and a name like that, that percentage is so infinitesimal, you can't even think about it. What you have to do as an actor is go in and want to do the work. And, you know, another friend of mine said, you know, I'm doing this play, but I have to take a loan out to do the play because it's paying me so little. I mean, there are times when you have to do that because it's about the work. It's about telling stories. It's about the acting. It's not about getting rich and famous, because Chicago is not the place to do that. And even if you move to New York and L.A., you know, the chances of your getting rich and famous are pretty small. But if you love to act and you can't do anything else, if you love theater and you love storytelling, then it can be a very rewarding business, but although not a lucrative one. You just have to know, I think it helps if you know how the deck is stacked against you, and just keep trying. If it's something you have to do, you'll just keep trying until you get something. Take classes, of course.
Right.
There are some good classes you can take in Chicago, and I think it's always good to be studying and learning.
Yeah, I've told that to some young, like, you run into someone who can sing, but they can't dance, and you wonder why they're not getting roles. I said, well, how come you're not taking tap lessons?
That's right. That's
you know, and then things like learning voiceover. I know you do voiceovers too, don't you?
But, you know, the more you can do, the better chance you'll have at making a living as an actor. If you can sing, that opens up a whole new area. Singing and dance, that you can do musicals, not just straight plays. And, you know, any little skill that you can get comes in handy. You just never know. I was doing a show once, and I had a lot of offstage time, and there was a fellow on crew who used to juggle, and I said, teach me how to juggle. Maybe I'll use it in a play sometime. I mean, you always have to be learning. But when you do a new play, you have to be learning about the characters and the people, and it's period piece. You want to read up on the history. You have to like learning, you have to like reading, you have to like discovering things about people and humanity.
So it's all about growing as a performer.
That's
as a
right.
performer.
That's right.
Well, I've seen you in so many things. I think you do comedy as good as anyone in town, and that's almost like, you know, we say triple threat. You can add comedy to that. And what was the show recently where you had the broken arm?
That was the musical comedy Murders of 1940.
Yeah, that was dynamite. And,
yes.
And you know, I at first thought that was a prop, and then later on I thought, now why would that be? And then I found out you had a severe broken arm
yes.
right when that show just opened.
Right when it just opened. But it's very funny. Somebody on the comment cards during tribute, somebody said they thought I hit the gun in the sling. That they thought that was a device, but I hit the gun in the sling.
Well, tell us what happened.
It was a murder mystery.
Didn't you, I mean, was it on stage? Or?
No. I slipped on the ice. I was playing on the beach with my dog. It was Christmas Day, and everybody... a beautiful day, and there was everybody was out for a walk, and I was just, you know, running and playing on the beach, and there was snow with ice under it, and who knew there was ice under that snow? It was just a bad accident.
And then when did you have to go on?
Well, I was in rehearsal, so we went to the emergency room. That day was Christmas Day. There wasn't anybody in the emergency room on staff or there, so I went that day, and then I think I went to rehearsal the next day. No, there is precedent for that. Foster broke her arm and kept on doing the show. Not Little Women. It was something she did after Little Women, where she broke her arm and kept on going. So, you know, you do what you have to do. You know, if you think you can make it, you try to make it. And look at Christina Applegate in Charity. She broke her foot for a few weeks and then went back to it. if you think you can keep going, you'll keep going. And if you think you can't, then you don't, you know. It all depends on what your doctor tells you to do.
Yeah, and as fundamental as that is, there are so many of the young actors in town that the slightest little thing that happens to them, you know, they fold up. You know, and I tell them, then you're not a player. You've got to – there's a lot of stick-to-itiveness to this, isn't there?
Well, there is. Yeah. And, you know, I was brought up in ballet, and there's a great discipline when you're a dancer, and there's great discipline in ballet. And, you know, aches and pains, you just have to put them out of your mind for the beauty of the dance. And you don't even think about that. After class or after performance, then you walk off stage or you go into the change room after class, and you go, ow, that really hurt. But at the time, you just put it out of your mind. And there's a stamina, I think, you build when you have a classical ballet training, classical ballet background. That holds you in good stead for the rest of your life, no matter what you're doing, whether you're performing or not. There's that discipline. There's nothing like that discipline, and there's nothing like that for building stamina, not only of body, but of mind and character. So I think ballet will hold you in good stead for whatever you choose to do.
Okay, where did you get the great voice? I know that's a lot of work, too.
I had a wonderful teacher when I was about 16 or 17. Her name was Eleanor Gardner. She has passed away, but she was a wonderful teacher and helped me enormously with my voice.
Well, tell us some of the best singing roles you've had.
Well, a while ago, I did Matinee Ava in Evita, and I loved doing that role. I really did, because it's so challenging, acting-wise and singing-wise. And again, stamina. You really need stamina to play that role. I enjoyed just recently doing Baby at the Evita Center Monster, because I love singing that score. It's Baldy Shire's score, and Patterns is one of my favorite songs, and I got to sing that in that show. You know, I've just been very lucky to do a lot of different things that I enjoy doing.
Well, I can. Besides you being this glamorous leading lady in a lot of shows, what I appreciate about you as a performer is you're not afraid to do some of the other roles. Remember Gypsy, the role you had Gypsy at Theater at the Center a couple of years ago?
Absolutely, and I was on point at Tessitura, back to my roots as a ballerina. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a testimony to the one of the characteristics of Chicago theater is there aren't a lot of egos, and I've seen you and Paula Scarfano, John Rieger, and Renee Matthews, and a lot of the other players in town that, you know, one show you're the star, and the next show you're in the ensemble supporting other people, and it's all about work.
It's about the work. It's about doing good work, and it's about having a job. And, you know, everybody has an ego, and our egos do get, you know, a little bruised from time to time. It's a tough business, and it will bruise your ego. But overall, if you love the work, you do it, and, you know, you get over the bruises. They don't. When I was doing Tita Vera at the Ivanhoe Theater, then called the Wellington, and the writers, the whole show was from New York. They hired 4 or 5 people here. And the idea was that it was going to be running here about 12 weeks, and then the New York people would leave, and it would be replaced with the Chicago cast, which did happen. Anyway, we had an actor's night or an industry night, and one of the authors said, I'm so worried about tonight. I said, why are you so worried about tonight? He said, well, actors are coming. It's going to be primarily actors in the house. They're not going to laugh, and they're not going to enjoy themselves, because they're all going to be thinking, you know, I should have been cast. And then I said, oh, you're so wrong. You don't know about Chicago actors. They're going to be here to support their friends, because they do know who are in it, and to support the New York people, and to hope that it's a success. Because the more shows that are a success, the more work there is for the Chicago actors, you know. If the show runs a long time, then Chicago actors will replace those New York actors. And if the show is a success, then the theater will be a success. And there'll be another show here after this one closes. And I said, I think Chicago actors have a perspective that's unique in the theater business. And you'll see that tonight, Jeff. And he came to me after and said, you're absolutely right. They're one of the best houses we've ever had.
Well, in the interest of our time now, again, tell us some of the biggest roles that you win. I know you won the Jeff. Tell us about the Jeff Award.
Well, I won for Best Supporting Actress in a play called Robert and Elizabeth. It was about the Browning. Robert Browning and Elizabeth Barrett Browning. It's a lovely musical, slightly reminiscent of My Fair Lady, along those lines. I love doing Nellie Forbush in South Pacific. I love playing Maria in Sound of Music. It was just such a joyful, joyful role to play. You know, sometimes you're playing a role that's like that. You're happy all the time. I love playing Adelaide in Guys and Dolls. I've always wanted to play it, and I got to do that. a few years ago at Theater at the Center, and that was just a role I wanted to play my whole life. In Bells, I did Bells Are Ringing, I played Ella, and that's another great 2 summers ago. In Stock, I played Fraulein Schneider in Cabaret, which I love doing. I love doing that play. I really
well, you do accents very well.
Yes, I do, and I just love playing Fraulein Schneider. It was such a wonderful, wonderful role, and again, the songs are so timely for what's going on. They really, really are.
Well, what haven't you done that you would like to do if you could wave a magic wand?
Well, I've always wanted to play Anna in The King and I, and that would, you know, be really icing on the cake to get to play that role someday, before I'm too old to play it.
Okay, anything else?
To do Chekhov, I'd love to do some Chekhov. I maybe because my heritage is Russian and Polish, I feel very close to Russian plays and Russian playwrights and Chekhov, and I've never done Chekhov, and I would really love to. Yeah, I would love to do some Chekhov.
Do you up to like Writers Theater and audition?
I haven't, because I'm usually booked doing other things. But I'm hopeful that I will get to audition for them at some point.
Well, when you're so busy doing musicals, it's hard to do the others.
It's hard to find room for everything, but you know, maybe I will. But just to you know get a slightly different perspective for myself, and you know, flex different acting muscles, and get a good change for myself mentally and artistically, I probably would now pick a straight play over a musical. But, you know, if I were doing nothing but Shakespeare and Shaw and Chekhov and a musical came along, I'd probably grab it again for the variety.
Well, in the interest of time here, we got about a minute and a half or so. Tell us again about Spitfire Grill, and you have what I consider the key or the lead role.
Well, there are three women, Shelby, Percy, and Hannah are
right.
The three lead roles. It's at the theater building. We open April 20th. That's tomorrow, oh my gosh, and we run till May 21st. We play Thursday through Saturday night at 7:30, and we play Sundays at 2:30, although this Sunday is our press night, and that will be at 6 o'clock. It's a good show. It has a lot of heart. It's a wonderful story.
I really appreciate you taking the time. I know with the busy schedule and tech week and everything, it's rough, but I did want to get this going because I admire your work. I love the play, and I love Provisional and Tim Gregory's what they're attempting to do. I think that they're going to emerge to be one of the better small equity houses in Chicago.
I think they will, because I think they're doing all the right things. Smart people and talented people, and they're doing all the right things.
Well, one of the right things they did was casting you in that role. I really mean that.
Well, I hope so.
And I'm looking,
I hope you'll take that on Sunday.
You know, you bet on the people.
Okay.
And, I mean, I know your work, and I know the show, and I know Tim Gregory's an actor, so what could go wrong? Unless the power goes out or something. But thank you for your time. And,
it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Tom.
And we're looking forward to the show. And folks, this is Tom Williams, and you have been listening to Talk Theater Chicago's Internet Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Well, thank you very much for listening to this enhanced episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before we let you go, you know the drill. It's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote has to deal with change. And it comes from Henry IV, Part 2, Act 5, Scene 5. Presume not that I am the thing I was. Well, thank you very much again. Don't forget, we have a new episode ready for your ears every Monday. So come on back to TalkTheaterInChicago.com and check it out. Until then, I'm Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.